Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 12, 2010, and you're listening to show number 49 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be reading aphorism number 15. And I wanted to say hello to some new people on the network. I understand Jacinta is listening for the first time. She's a regular Ning web user, but has not had a chance previously to listen to Blog Talk Radio. And welcome to Saji, Christina, Dr. Sushil, Heidi, Susa, Manjuntanant. I don't know how to pronounce your name, but if you're listening, we welcome you. Marilyn, Vicky, and Vera, are you there? Maybe she is. Static on the line. Maybe we can get her to talk in while I am starting with some of the inspirations. I have only two little ones today. This is from a person on Twitter. Her name is Suzanne, and she does EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, if anybody's ever heard of it. She quotes Robert Half, who says, when one teaches to learn. And in our case, I'm hoping that when we're both learning, everyone else is also learning along with us. Vera, is your sound in there?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
Much, much better. Okay. It's coming in loud and clear. And the second little bit of inspiration is from someone named Fred Hassan. And he quotes Francis Bacon, who says, a prudent question is one half of wisdom. And I think this is something that, Vera, you would especially like, because I know you've spoken to me previously about making a good question, and asking good questions is part of wisdom and learning and knowledge.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything? And then the last thing is, the only thing I'm going to say about the network today is I had a brilliant idea. Well, should I call my ideas brilliant? I don't know. But I'm starting a film festival. I was sleuthing around, surfing on the internet, and all of these videos were coming at me so quickly, and I'm thinking, I've got to share these with the neighborhood. I have to share them with the community. And The first film is an oldie, 1952, by a famous producer, filmmaker, musician, incredible guy all around, Norman McLaren. And so this 1952 film is called Neighbors, and we are all neighbors. And see what you think. There's a place to comment. Okay. Are you ready to start in with aphorism number 15, or did you want to do a review of the leading up aphorism?
Well, we've been talking about, in general, about disease being in the vital force. The vital force is deranged and therefore produces disease symptoms. And in aphorism 14, we talked about how every curable malady makes itself known to the accurately observing physician by means of morbid signs and symptoms, which leads to the whole question of, if there is nothing to see, does that mean health, or does that mean incurable malady?
Good question.
All of these are questions that we relate. I, I don't see, Debbie, that through one reading of the Organon we reach all its secrets. I feel that through one reading of the Organon we uncover some questions and directions. And then we read again and discover some more questions and directions. And I really see it as a process that goes on over and over and over again as we increase our understanding of the subject. So it doesn't bother me when there are open questions. It's like having a sequel. You know that this will be continued.
Yes. We're in a TV series. Yes, it is a sequel. And the reason is because everyone is at a different point in their development, in their growth, in their education, in their life, and they are seeing on the outside from what they read or what they're in touch with in their life, something that's developing within them. And what is observable is something that is touching their vital force. So each year, hopefully, we are working on growing, maturing, and, you know, people call it a circular annual event of like starting a new year and your birthday, but it's actually a spiraling where you're just building and growing each year the knowledge that you've accumulated previously onto something new. You can make something old something new by finding ways to make it real for you. So I went off on a little tangent there, and bring us back, Vera.
Okay, aphorism 15. The affection of the morbidly deranged spirit-like dynamis, vital force, that animates our body in the invisible interior, and the totality of outwardly cognizable symptoms produced by it in the organism and representing the existing malady, constitute a whole. They are one and the same. The organism is indeed the material instrument of the life, but it is not conceivable without the animation imparted to it by the instinctively perceiving or regulating dynamis, just as the vital force is not conceivable without the organism. Consequently, the two together constitute a unity, although in thought our mind separates this unity into two distinct conceptions for the sake of easy comprehension.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you want to go first on your thoughts on this, or would you like me to say something?
It reminded me of a poem I read. I think it may have been by George Herbert. I'm not sure. It's an argument between body and soul, where the body says to the soul, I mean, even though the vital force isn't the soul, it seems to me part of what goes on, the vital force needs to be in harmony with the body and in harmony with itself. And when that doesn't happen, the vital force is producing symptoms through the body, and the symptoms are difficult and uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. There's also, I think Plato has something about a dynamic really between the inside and the outside. I don't know if it's at all relevant, because the vital force keeps the instrument of existence in good working order. Mm-hmm. And the instrument of existence is what we can use to fulfill a higher purpose, as in aphorism 9. But the whole concept of the whole, and the whole has to be working harmoniously. And if it's not working harmoniously, we don't look for the answers in the exterior, we look for the answers in the interior. Mm-hmm. I know those were some thoughts on it. What do you think?
Well, if you find George Herbert's poem, that would be nice to post. What comes to my mind as we read this aphorism number 15 is the story of, or the musical song, Love and Marriage, and you can't have one without the other. And, you know, and in your own personal home, you need to have that harmony in that love and marriage between the parts, between the two halves. And this is a really very rich and topic to go into, because if you look at the body, and you look at traditional Chinese medicine our brain itself is in two parts. And he says it makes it easier for us to conceive and recognize easy comprehension. For the sake of easy comprehension, we have these two distinct concepts. And in our mind, we also physically have these two distinct halves, which look like a walnut, you know, the two parts. And these two parts must communicate with each other. And otherwise, it will be separated, you know. There's a quote that I found from the Upanishad, which says, where the skull divides, there lies the gate of God. And, you know, there's these two hemispheres, the left with the language and the right that deals with pattern and recognition. It all seems to touch upon homeopathy. And people who have a damaged right cerebral hemisphere were unable to recognize simple patterns or enjoy music, but they could read or speak normally. And conversely, the people with the left brain damage were able to recognize pattern, but their speech was impaired. And there's just so much in Chinese medicine about yin and yang, the polarities, opposites, day and night, life and death. And this is all within the entire organon, these concepts of duality and conflict and how we create this place of harmony or recognize the signs and symptoms that are being given to us. Okay. What do you think of that?
I think it's a really interesting subject. I don't think that the poem that I'm looking for is George Herbert. I think that there is something in Andrew Marvel on it. I'm just like flipping through as we speak. But now I have to go look for that poem. Definitely one of my favorites. If I can, I'll post it.
Go ahead.
But we do need to distinguish. I mean, this is a direction that my thoughts are taking me into. But it's not quite what we're talking about here, because I don't think Hahnemann at any place posits that the vital force is the soul. I think I'm saying to some extent by bringing up that poem, it's as if I'm drawing a parallel. But I think that there is something about the need for internal harmony, or perhaps the expression of internal and external harmony, that shows us health. And when the hidden interior and the exterior are not in harmony. Although you could say that if the exterior is expressing the disease of the interior, then that is a form of harmony. But I'm digressing here. Should we move on to 16?
I would not call it a form of harmony. I'd call it a form of communication. It's an expression, a form of these two parts that are communicating with each other, that are in other words, the word communication seems to be key in his writings to me. I personally take it that way. And if there is something that's being expressed within the body, whether it is a dysfunction or a growth or something, there's something being said there. And then on the outside, when we perceive, and I would say humans, the gift that we have is observation. So now we have this gift of observation through our senses, and now we can communicate with each other and with ourselves and with spirit and with soul. So vital force, as you say, is not soul, but it is the in-between. It's the space between the two halves. It's what brings together the ability for us to communicate it on all three levels with creator, self, and each other. So I think Hahnemann is on to something here.
It's interesting also when you talk in terms of communication, another image presented itself also from poetry and literature, where you see very often that writers make use of there's a term for it, I don't remember what it is, when the main character in a novel also is sad, and then all of a sudden you'll find that the weather is bad, that it's cloudy, it's gloomy, when the main character is happy, then the weather tends to be sunny. And it's sort of when the vital force is sad, it's something has gone wrong with it. It's sad. So its surroundings are sad. So it's expressing itself through its surroundings much in the same way as the writer will make the weather express the emotions of the central characters.
Right. So in drama, in theater, in literature, it is the setting that is an indicator of the internal emotion of the character, the main character, whoever's being played at the time. So it's sometimes there's what's called a premonition. You know, you hear the violins playing and you know what's coming because it's an indication. You know that the music is telling you something's going to be changing here in the drama, in the setting and scene and plot of this presentation or whatever it happens to be. So, yeah, I mean, it's all connected. And it's just up to us to be able to recognize and be very observant of what's happening, not only on the in the plot as we read, but internally when we are in this drama totally and completely, can we separate ourselves from that, or do we begin to cry as somebody on stage is now going through some kind of a trauma? So
I think there's the element of how much we'll respond or react to it. But I think also there's the element of how much we're aware of it. I think very often when we're reading a book, we're not aware unless someone points it out to us that the weather has gone gloomy because our main character is sad. Or the weather has gone wild because the main character is feeling wild, like in Wuthering Heights. Ah, we never thought that this could get to be a discussion on literature.
Oh, always. We go everywhere. Wherever it takes us, we go. I would say that I personally can be in both positions of observer and knowledge about what's happening because I like to dissect, you know, as a graphic designer, as somebody who loves to write, I like to know what techniques did the creator of this film or this written work use to make this, what language is used and everything else. What is the techniques that are and tools that are being used to move this drama forward, to tell us more about the character? And so I don't know how many people do that, but I certainly do. And in that case, I do become separated from the emotional intensity of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? What about when you're playing music? You know, you're concentrating on, you know, this very heavy-duty piece, and you can listen to it and be totally swept away, or you can be, ooh, what's the guy's hands doing on that piano? You know? You could be in two places at once. Okay. Are we going to move to 16 or...
Yeah, let's try moving to 16. We've been going into interesting depths away, but I think it's very much what we're talking about here in terms of vital force, in terms of a vital force that seeks expression of its derangement. I think it's very much part of the human condition, and perhaps that's why I was drawn to talk about poetry today, and it seems that you were... okay with that direction of discussion.
Always.
It's the human condition. When something is wrong, we need to express it in some way. And very often the area that feels hurt cannot express on its own. It will express through words, through sounds, through painting, through writing, through music, through the various things that we human beings do in order to express ourselves, up to and including throwing things. But
throwing things?
It's a form of expression.
Okay. Wild and woolly, belladonna.
mind striking, right? Okay, let's move to 16. Let's see if we can go through the aphorism.
Okay, would you like me to read?
Yeah, go ahead.
Our vital force, as a spirit-like dynamis, cannot be attacked and affected by injurious influences on the healthy organism caused by the external inimical forces that disturb the harmonious play of life, otherwise than in a spirit-like dynamic way. And in like manner, all such morbid derangements, diseases, cannot be removed from it by the physician in any other way than by the spirit-like dynamic, virtual alternative powers of the serviceable medicines acting upon our spirit-like vital force, which perceives them through the medium of the sentient faculty of the nerves everywhere present in the organism, so that it is only by their dynamic action on the vital force that the remedies are able to reestablish and do actually reestablish health and vital harmony after the changes in the health of the patient cognizable by our senses, the totality of the symptoms, have revealed the disease to the carefully observing and investigating physician as fully as was requisite in order to enable him to cure it. Again, that was many breaths of one huge sentence.
No full stops, huh?
I think there's one teeny tiny footnote. The footnote is, most severe disease may be produced by sufficient disturbance of the vital force through the imagination and also cured by the same means. Ooh, he's bringing in some very interesting thought there. We can change, we can do something with the imagination. Let's save that for later. A tasty morsel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oddly enough, there's a word that I want to attach to importance to that never occurred to me how important it is in our culture today. In our culture today, complementary medicine holds sway. It's the ruling form of medicine. And there are two terminologies used for anything that's not complementary medicine, apart from quackery. And some call themselves complementary practitioners, and some call themselves alternative practitioners. But the alternative word is the less politically correct one, because we are expected to go as much as possible hand in hand with conventional. And many people, patients and others, will ask, well, what can you do to support the antibiotic treatment? Like, as if we're a complementary therapy. And the truth is, homeopathy is the most alternative medicine that I've ever come across.
Okay.
And I think that's something that's very difficult for many homeopaths to absorb, because we want to be complementary. Complementary means, you know, like IBM or Mac, the whole debate there. If you're complementary, then you can get on with everything. You can manage with everything. You can be easy and friendly with everything. As soon as you say, I'm not complementary, I'm alternative, I see sickness and health differently to the way you do. I think that some of your treatments are very harmful to the life. I think that I have something different, not supportive, different. And I think that that whole issue, even though it's not the central point of this aphorism, but it is part of what all these aphorisms have to do with. The conventional view does not take any kind of vital force or derangement of vital force into account. What Hanuman's presenting to us is an alternative, not complementary, view of health and sickness. So
You started out saying complementary medicine holds sway, and
conventional. Oh, okay. If I said complementary, it was a mistake. Conventional medicine holds sway.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I was confused. Okay,
yes.
So conventional medicine is what is in vogue now and what has been for some time now. And even though it is actually new and constantly thinking of new things and changing what their ideology is, I don't know what you want to call that, homeopathy has been a steadfast form of medicine for a very, very long time based on universal wisdoms and principles. And why it has not been lifted to a higher status, I don't know exactly, you know, how humanity has enabled this to happen. And there is somebody on the network, Edwin, who I would think would confirm everything that you said, because I know I've spoken to him personally, and he says that we must stand our ground and say we are completely different. And there's just no, what is the word for, it's not complimentary, but we're two different entities, two different types of modalities that don't really, I don't know whether it can't be complementary. In some ways, we can complement, but maybe on in small areas. You know what I'm
saying? I think that I know what you're saying, but I think that in many, many ways, unless or until the conventional world can see, can conceptualize of a model of sickness and health, where we're talking about a vital force, we're talking about something that is very different to physical diseased matter that needs to be removed in order to cure the patient. Homeopathy is on an alternative track. I think that's one of the hardest things to accept and acknowledge. I know,
well,
certainly I was shocked by it in my
I don't want to dismiss conventional medicine totally, because I think that they are like a baby, and they are really learning. And if you think about what is going on today in the health world, and we only have like 2 minutes left, if you think about the fact that they are bringing Reiki practitioners in, and they are psychiatrists and psychologists are using more and more energy medicine techniques.
It's important. Sorry to cut in, but it's important for me to clarify something. I don't dismiss conventional medicine. Personally,
okay.
I don't dismiss it. Conventional medicine has its advantages, it has its benefits, and every now and then we do have need for it. I mean, especially certainly in all the areas that Hanuman is talking about, with splinting and stuff like that and removing foreign bodies. But the point that I'm making is how we see ourselves. And ultimately, I believe that homeopathy is an alternative practice. It's not complementary. It doesn't go hand in hand, because it sees sickness and health differently. But I'm by no means dismissing conventional medicine.
Okay. Just so long as we have that clear, that it's just, it's almost like we've been talking about this duality this entire session.
Mm-hmm.
And there are the two halves of the brain, and there are the yin and yang, and there is this one way, which is the material, which is conventional, and then there is the other way, which is using the abilities that we have at observation and understanding there is a vital force, and there is more to life than just material. And we just can't heal people by removing something. There's much more to it.
I think we're going to have to wrap up, right?
Okay, yes, we are. What would you like to close with today?
Well, I think that we've been dealing with alternative poetry.
Okay. Alternative poetry. Okay. And I'm just going to go ahead.
The music of the spheres. I don't know. How would you close?
I was just going to go with love and marriage. You can't have one without the other. That's my favorite.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, we'll talk again tomorrow and continue on with aphorism number 16, I believe.
Okay.
Bye,
Debbie.
You.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening. Take your Organon off the shelf and read it, please.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.